checking out at Target this week, they had on the stand a large format centennial edition magazine. It was boldly titled in red, Al Capone, Public Enemy Number One. It reminded me of a story about Artful Eddie. He was one of the slickest of the slick lawyers. He was one part of the roar of the Roaring Twenties, a crony of Al Capone. He ran the gangster's dog tracks, and he mastered the simple art of fixing the race by overfeeding seven dogs and betting on the eighth. Wealth, status, style. Artful Eddie lacked nothing. Then why did he turn himself in? Why did he offer to squeal on Capone? What was his motive? Didn't Eddie know the surefire consequences of ratting on the mob? He knew, but he'd made up his mind. What did he have to gain? What could society give him that he didn't already have? He had money and power, prestige. What was the hitch? Well, Eddie revealed the hitch, his son. Eddie had spent his life with the despicable. He had smelled the stench of the underground and long enough. And for his son, he wanted more. He wanted to give his son a name. And to give his son a name, he would have to clear his own. Eddie was willing to take a risk so that his son could have a clean slate. Artful Eddie never saw his dream come true. After Eddie squealed, the mob remembered, and two shotgun blasts silenced him forever. Was it worth it? Well, for the son, it was. Artful Eddie's boy lived up to the sacrifice, and he's actually one of the best known names in the world. But before we talk about the son, let's talk about the principle here, risky love. Love that takes a chance, love that goes out on a limb, love that makes a statement and leaves a legacy. Love that is unexpected, surprising, stirring, acts of love that steal the heart and leave impressions on the soul, acts of love that are never forgotten. Max Lucado points out that such acts of love were seen in the final days of Jesus' life. It took place in the town of Bethany during a dinner party where Jesus shared with his friends Lazarus and his two sisters Martha and Mary. And within a week, Jesus would be feeling the sting of the Roman whip and the point of that thorny crown and the iron of the executioner's nail. But on this evening, he would only feel the love of these friends. And it was during this dinner party that Mary would provide a demonstration of love and devotion the world would never forget. An act of extravagant tenderness in which Jesus wasn't the giver, but the receiver. Jesus not only set aside his reputation, his name, his dignity to die on the cross, but he also set aside his power as God. We can only imagine the emotions he must have felt when he heard the people say to him that he saved others, but he can't save himself. Matthew 27:42, save yourself. Isn't that what selfish love does? It saves our name, our reputation, our physical bodies. Yet this is the very temptation that Jesus faced in the Garden of Gethsemane when he said to his disciples, watch and pray so that you will not fall into temptation. The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. He was focused on the joy set before him, focused on his Father, focused on the greater glory, focused on us. He knew dying would bring us to him. the riskiest act of love was done for you and me. This dinner party held in the home of Simon a week before Jesus' crucifixion isn't, as you know, the only mention of Mary of Bethany we find in the Bible. In fact, in an earlier, very familiar account, we get an interesting picture of some of the family dynamics between her and her sister Martha. You know the story. It takes place when Jesus took a short break from his travels to rest in the home of his friends. You find it in Luke 10, verses 38 to 42. As Jesus and his disciples continued on their way to Jerusalem, they came to a certain village where a woman named Martha welcomed him into her home. Her sister Mary sat at Jesus' feet, listening to what he taught. But Martha was distracted by the big dinner she was preparing, and she came to Jesus and said, "Lord, doesn't it seem unfair to you that my sister just sits here while I do all the work? Tell her to come and help me." But the Lord said to her, "My dear Martha, you are worried and upset about so many things, all these details. There's only one thing worth being concerned about, and Mary has discovered it, and it will not be taken from her." Well, Martha is clearly a soul devoted to hospitality and organization, and she's a little more frugal than frivolous and a little more practical than pensive. Her household's a tight ship, and she's a stern captain. And ask her to choose between a broom and a book, she'll take the broom. Her sister Mary would prefer the book. She has thoughts to think, and she dishes can wait. So let Martha go to the market. Mary wants to go to the library. Two sisters, two personalities, and as long as they understand each other, it's hand in glove. But when one resents the other, it becomes flint and stone. And what Martha was doing was by no means a bad thing. She was waiting on Christ and her other guests, acting as a servant to all of them. But her thoughts and her feelings had become too self-centered, too self-focused, and was spoiled by an attitude of sinful pride. She turned her attention from Christ and began watching Mary with a critical eye. And naturally, it began to ruin the whole evening for Martha. Mary, by contrast, was consumed with thoughts of Christ and became completely oblivious to everything else. She sat at his feet. She listened to his words. She was by no means being lazy. She simply understood the true importance of this occasion. The Son of God himself was a guest in their house. Listening to him and worshiping him were, at that moment, the very best use of Mary's energies and the right place for her to focus her attention. John MacArthur comments, "One thing that stood out about Mary of Bethany was her ability to observe and understand the heart of Christ. Mary's temperament seemed naturally more contemplative than Martha's. In Luke 10, she wanted to listen intently to Jesus while Martha bustled about, making preparations to serve the meal. In John 11, when Jesus arrived after Lazarus had already died, Martha ran out of the house to meet Christ. But Mary remained in the house, being immersed in grief. And only when Martha told her that Jesus was looking for her did she come out. People like Mary are not given to sudden impulse or shallow activity. Yet while Jesus had to coax a confession of faith out of Martha, and even that was pretty shaky, Mary simply fell at the Lord's feet and worshiped. Mary seemed to be able to discern Jesus' true meaning, even better than some of the disciples. She had discovered the one thing needful. True worship and devotion in one's heart and full attention to Christ. There was a higher priority in her life than service, and the good part she had chosen would not be taken away from her, even for the something as gracious and beneficial as having a meal. Mary's humble, obedient heart was a far greater gift to Christ than Martha's well-set table. This establishes worship as a high priority for every Christian. Nothing, including even service rendered to Christ, is more important than listening to him, honoring him with our hearts. Remember what Jesus told the Samaritan woman at the well? John 4:23, God is seeking true worshipers. Christ had found one in Mary. He would not affirm Martha's reprimand of her because it was Mary, not Martha, who probably understood that worship is a higher duty to Christ than service even rendered to him himself. So it's a danger, even for people who love Christ, that we not become so concerned with doing things for him that we begin to neglect hearing him, listening to him with our hearts, remembering what he has done for us. We mustn't allow service for Christ to crowd out our worship of him. The moment our works become more important to us than our worship, we've turned the true spiritual priorities on their heads. The next time we meet Mary in the Gospels, the scene in Bethany has completely changed. In place of the festive dinner party, we find her at her sister Martha's, mourning over the death of a loved one. And of course, that loved one is none other than their brother Lazarus. And when Mary's brother Lazarus died and she heard that Jesus was finally coming, she stayed home while Martha went out to meet Christ. And only when Martha had told her that Jesus was asking for her, as I mentioned, did she come out. And when she met Jesus, her statement expressed the same astonished belief that Martha's had. Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But the next time we meet Mary, shortly after the resurrection of Lazarus, she takes center stage by demonstrating an act of risky love that the world would remember forever after. This scene takes place 6 days before the Passover feast, again in the city of Bethany, where Jesus is in town for the dinner party. This time, the setting for the party is the home of a man named Simon, who had, quote, a skin disease, Matthew 26:6. He had once been known as Simon the leper, but no longer. Now he was just Simon. And we don't know when Jesus healed him, but we do know what he was like before he was healed. Stooped shoulders, fingerless hand, scabbed arm, infected back, draped in rags, a tattered wrap that hides all of the face except for two screaming white eyes. But that was before Jesus touched him. Now he's having Jesus and his disciples over for dinner. A simple act, but it's a very significant one. After all, the Pharisees are already cleaning out a cell for Jesus. Won't be long until they finger Lazarus as an accomplice, and they could all be on wanted papers. It takes nerve to have a wanted man in your house. But it takes more nerve to put your hand on a leper's sore. I can remember going with my dad as a child out. He would visit a leper colony about twice a month. And he told me, stay in that Jeep. And he would have services there for the people. Leprosy was a horrible disease. But Simon couldn't forget what Jesus had done for him. Where there had been a nub, there was now a finger for his little daughter to hold. Where there had been ulcerated sores all over his body, there was now skin for his wife to softly stroke. Where there had been lonely hours in quarantine, There were now happy hours just like this, a house full of friends, a table full of food. And at that dinner party given in Jesus' honor, we read that Martha served while Lazarus was among those reclining at the table. But for Mary, simply giving dinner was not enough. Quote, John 12:3, Mary came in with a jar of very expensive aromatic oils, anointed and massaged Jesus' feet, and then wiped them with her hair. The fragrance of the oils filled the house. This time we don't read that Martha objected. She evidently learned that there's a place for praise and worship, and this is what her sister was doing. Mary was worshiping. This is what she loved to do. The smell of the perfume filled the house, just like the sound of praise can fill a church. Jesus received the gesture as an extravagant demonstration of love, a friend surrendering her most treasured gift. Max again. As Jesus hung on the cross, we have to wonder if he detected the fragrance on his skin. It's not unlikely that he could. After all, it was 12 ounces worth, imported, concentrated, sweet, strong enough to stay on a man's clothes for days. And between the lashings, we have to ponder if he relived the moment as he hugged the Roman post and braced himself for the next ripping of his back. Did he remember the oil that soothed his skin? Could he, in the faces of the women who stared, see the small, soft face of Mary who cared? She was the one who believed him. Whenever he spoke of his death, others shrugged, others doubted. But Mary believed. Mary believed because he spoke with a firmness that she'd heard before. Lazarus, come out! Her brother came out. And after 4 days in a stone-sealed grave, he walked out. And as she kissed the now warm hand of her just dead brother, she turned to see Jesus. The streaks on his face had dried, and he was smiling. In her heart, at that moment, she knew she would never doubt his words. In the Old Testament, the law of God commanded the people to make offerings to the Lord at the temple, a ram on the Day of Atonement, a farmer's first crop, a peasant's pigeon. All of these were sacrifices on the altar of the temple. The sacrifices were a way for the people to express their worship to God and their gratitude for his forgiveness of their sins. But most of all, the sacrifices pointed to the greatest sacrifice yet to come, the death of Christ on the cross. Mary's loving worship of Jesus, her Lord, thus involved pouring an offering over the greatest offering that's ever been given. She gave Jesus her most expensive earthly possession to anoint him for his death and burial, that he would have to endure the price he had to pay for your sins and for mine. May we all worship like Mary. May we love him so much that we put everything we own, every person we love, everything we are at his feet. So it was that when Jesus spoke of his death, Mary believed. And when she saw Simon and Jesus and Lazarus together, she couldn't resist. Simon the healed leper, head thrown back in laughter. Lazarus, the resurrected corpse, leaning in to see what Jesus had to say. And Jesus, the source of life for both, perhaps telling a joke for the second time. Now is the right time, she had told herself. It wasn't an act of impulse, a spontaneous gesture, but it was an extravagant one. She had carried the large veil of perfume from her house to Simon's, The perfume was worth a year's wages. Maybe the only thing of value she even had. Was it a logical thing to do? But since when is logic part of love? Logic hadn't touched Simon. Common sense hadn't wept at Lazarus' tomb. Practicality hadn't fed the crowds or loved the little children. Love did. Extravagant, risky, chance-taking love. And now someone needed to show the same to the giver of such love. So Mary did. She stepped up behind him and stood with the jar in her hand, and with a couple of nervous moments, every mouth was silent, every eye wide as she carefully removed the ornate cover, and she came behind him and began to pour and anoint his head with oil, down his shoulders, on his feet. Wherever you go, the gesture of Mary spoke, breathe the aroma and remember the one who cares. On his skin, the fragrance of faith. In his clothing, the balm of belief. Even as the Roman soldiers later divided his garments, we wonder if her gesture brought a bouquet into the cemetery. The other disciples, they mocked her extravagance. They thought it foolish. Ironic, isn't it? Jesus had saved them from a sinking boat in a stormy sea. He had enabled them to heal, to preach. He had brought focus into their fuzzy lives. And yet now these disciples, the recipients of Christ's exorbitant love, chastise her generosity. Why waste that perfume? It could have been sold for a great deal of money, and the money given to the poor, they smirk. And don't miss Jesus' prompt defense of Mary. Matthew 26:10, why are you troubling this woman? She did an excellent thing for me. His message is just as powerful today as it was then. Don't miss it. There is a time for risky love. There's a time for extravagant gestures. There's a time to pour out your affections on those you love. And when the time comes, seize it. Don't miss it. Don't put it off until someday. On one Kenya mission trip, I roomed with a new church member. And Alan told me how he had saved up to buy his precious wife a ruby ring that she desired. And he planned to give it to her on their next anniversary. But that day never came. She suddenly passed away before he could see the gleam in her eye in thankfulness for his extravagant love gift. What a regret, he shared. I quote Max, someday, the enemy of risky love is a snake whose tongue has mastered the talk of deception. Someday, he hisses. Someday I can take her on that vacation. Someday I'll have time to call and to chat. Someday the children will understand why I'm so busy. But you know the truth as well as I do. You can say it better. Some days never come. Listen. The price of practicality is sometimes higher than extravagance, but the rewards of risky love are always greater than its costs. So go to the effort, invest the time, write the letter, make the apology, purchase the gift, do it. The seized opportunity renders joy. The neglected opportunity brings regret. At the end of the story, Jesus said, Mary did an excellent thing for me. This woman poured perfume on my body to prepare me for burial. And I tell you the truth, wherever the good news is preached in all the world, what this woman has done will be told, and people will remember her." Mary's gesture of worship to her Lord will never be forgotten. Her act of risky love in anointing Christ for his burial was a risky gift that was given at just the right time. Which brings us back to the story of Artful Eddie, the Chicago mobster that I introduced at the beginning of this message. As you'll recall, Eddie squealed on Al Capone so that his son could have a fair chance. He paid the price when the mob silenced him forever. Was it worth it? I believe Eddie would have said so had he lived to see his son Butch grow up. I think he would have been proud of Butch's appointment to Annapolis. I think he would have been proud of the young man's commissioning as a World War II Navy pilot. I think he would have been proud as he read of his son downing five bombers in the Pacific night, saving the lives of hundreds of sailors on board the carrier Lexington. He would have been proud that his son cleared the family name. The Congressional Medal of Honor that Butch received was proof. And when people say the name O'Hare in Chicago, they no longer think about gangsters. They think about aviation heroism. And now when you say his name, you have something else to think about: the undenying dividends of risky love. Think about it the next time you hear it. Think about it the next time you fly into an airport named after the son of a gangster gone good, the son of Eddie O'Hare. Today, you and I can follow the risky love that Mary modeled for Christ. There's an elderly person in your community who's probably been isolated by COVID. Spending an hour of time would mean the world to him or her. Some kids in Girdwood and Anchorage don't have a dad, no father to take them fishing or to a basketball game. Maybe you can. They can't pay you back. They can't even afford the snacks, but they'll smile like a cantaloupe slice in your kindness. How about this one? Right down the hall from you, from your bedroom, is a person who shares your last name. Shock that person with kindness. Something outlandish. Your homework done without no complaints. Coffee served before he awakens. A love letter written to her for no special reason. Alabaster poured just because. Do over generous deeds. Acts beyond reimbursement. Kindness without compensation. Do a deed for which cannot be repaid. Be risky with your acts of love, just as Mary was with her Lord. 1 John 4:10, this is real love. Not that we loved God, but that he loved us and sent his Son as a sacrifice to take away our sins. Selah.